Today is July 16th, 2014, and this is episode number 263 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, Managing Editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a fishy fish, and I did love him so. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. If you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at fishyfish@macobserver.com. Wait. ACM. ACM at macobserver.com.
I thought we were going to have to make a new email address real fast. Fishy fish.
Boy, the first time I saw The Life of Brian, I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Still in the theater. And it was first run, and not The Life of Brian.
You're thinking Meaning of Life.
Meaning of Life. Thank you. And I had been awake for 36 hours, so mm-hmm. I was absolutely in that stone. I was at that stoned point of being awake for too long,
but without chemical substances to actually make you stoned.
And those transition scenes in particular with the fishy fish just blew my mind. So it was difficult to deal with them.
I saw the movie completely sober.
Yep.
Got to the end of the movie and decided it would be best viewed with some form of altered state of mind,
probably.
But I've never been a recreational drug user.
No, we should get someone on who might offer some perspective on that. Completely unrelated, maybe David be on the show.
Yeah, it could happen. Yeah,
completely unrelated.
I ended up getting drunk and watching it again.
Yeah.
And I was just tired. So alcohol as a mind-altering substance for watching Meaning of Life doesn't do it.
I see.
Just so you guys know.
I see. Good to know. Good to know. The hands. It was the hands.
Oh, with the multi-jointed arms?
Yes, with the fingers that still move. That was, at a point where CGI was not a thing.
Right. Yeah, that was a mechanical effect.
Yes. Not only how did they do it, why did they do that? It was to bother me.
It was to bother you. You have no idea how happy it made John Cleese to know that he bothered you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No doubt. All right. Well, so this is theoretically the Apple Context Machine, a show that's about Apple and the tech world.
Oh, I thought it was the TMO Monty Python show, and I was going to start talking about their new show that they have going on in the UK right now. But whatever, we'll talk about Apple. Yeah,
there's a new Monty Python show.
It's a live stage thing it's all the surviving Pythons.
Nice.
And it started just a few weeks ago, and it is getting just rave reviews. People are loving it, saying it's the best thing that they've done.
So they all sort of kissed and made up, by which I mean everyone and John Cleese kissed and made up.
Yeah, they've all gotten along just fine for a long time.
Oh, that's good.
It's just a matter of, do they really feel like making new Python content? Do they feel like rehashing and updating old content? And they all have these other projects going on. So what it comes down to is Eric Idle badgers everyone long enough where they're like, you've put together some stuff that looks kind of interesting. Let's all get together and make something even cooler out of it. And he's like, yeah, all right. And they did. And it looks like they're all having an absolute blast with it.
Can't wait to see some version of it.
I'm very excited. I hope that at some point they bring it to the States.
All right, so in the spirit of taking the show in unexpected directions.
Fishy. Yes?
I have something to spring on you.
Okay, set my drink down.
Well, it's not that kind of spring. Stephen Mullally has joined Google's board. We didn't talk about this ahead of time.
No.
Alan Mullally. I like to call him Alan sometimes. Sometimes I call him Stephen. But most people call him Alan. It's a little thing he and I do.
Okay, that explains my confusion.
Yeah, Alan Mullally, former CEO of Ford, retired on July 1st, has joined. Good. Now, if I had said, hey, what company's board do you think Alan Mullally just joined? What would you have said?
Oh, I would have thrown out something like Tesla, just because that would have seemed like crazy out there.
Well, I was thinking Microsoft, because Microsoft was reportedly considering him for their CEO gig.
Mm-hmm.
And Ford has long been in bed with Microsoft with the Ford Sync crap, which is powered by some sort of Windows crap.
You know, when people say in bed with, and they refer to companies like that, I get this vision in my head that I really, really don't want. And it's these two past middle age, but not old men.
So it's not a lemon party.
It's not a lemon party, no. But they're laying in this bed together, looking at each other very awkwardly. And they're wearing like the old man tank top style t-shirts. And you know, I think I'm starting to understand what some of my emotional dysfunctions in life are.
Yeah, no joke.
Yeah.
So in any event, Mr. Mullally has been closely aligned with Microsoft for some time, and yet here he is joining Google's board. I think he's joining the audit committee. And I find this fascinating. I mean, between this and Apple's announcement with IBM, I don't think this is a good week for Microsoft.
No, you think?
You know, I mean, wow. So first of all, this shows, I think, Google's interest in actually having its driverless car be a thing.
I'm with you on that. Yeah, that totally makes sense.
But, you know, this was, Microsoft's board is large and largely complete. Google has 10 members on the board. This he'll make the 11th. This compares to Apple, of course, the biggest of all the companies.
They have what, eight?
Eight. Currently at eight. So it's not like Microsoft needed someone on the board. Of course, you know, Google's board is really about pleasing Larry and Sergey, to a lesser extent, Eric. Kind of like Apple's board was under Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Jobs in this case. And I don't know. I find it really interesting that he went to Google's board, and I see this as a very unringing endorsement of Microsoft. An unringing endorsement. That's a new technical term I just invented.
You've been coming up with new terms this week.
I have, for good or for ill. I have been, in fact, inventing the new words.
Well, and I have no problem with that. Okay, so the whole thing with Apple teaming up with IBM and now former Ford execs ending up on Google's board. Yeah, you're right. This does not bode well for Microsoft. Although, I just thought of this. In the case of Microsoft and the whole Apple IBM thing, Microsoft could say that this is a case where Apple and IBM both had a major missing component in their business strategy. So they teamed up to try and compete with Microsoft, who can do all of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I don't necessarily believe that's true, but I could see where it could be spun that way. Mm-hmm. Should we tell people what we're talking about?
Well, we were just talking about Al Mullally.
Right. Wait, now he's Al?
Alan. He's Alan.
I didn't realize how close you two were. I mean, I remember seeing you chumming around at the summer barbecue.
Well, and to be fair, he's always singing at me. You can call me Al.
He has a beautiful singing voice.
He does. In any event, I thought that was interesting, but that I'd throw out there for you.
That is interesting.
So, should we just kind of spring right on to IBM?
Sure. Yeah, as long as we're here, why not?
Now, we talked about this morning in the TMO's daily observations, but we both thought this was a topic deserving a more in-depth conversation.
Yes. And for those of you that haven't listened to the Wednesday TMO Daily Observations podcast yet, what we're talking about is the news that Apple and IBM have created a joint venture called Mobile First for iOS. And the deal is IBM is putting together all of these apps and services that leverage the iPhone and the iPad as really serious enterprise-level business tools.
And presumably we'll have a greater access to Apple APIs than non-partner companies.
Yeah, that would make sense.
And certainly, if I was IBM, that's what I would want to make this deal, to sign on to this deal. I would demand that. And I think if I was Apple, I would grant them that access.
I'm with you. If I were Apple, I would totally grant them the access because this is Apple's easy way into enterprise level market potentially dominance.
Is there easy access to the next step in enterprise access? Because right now they've got a lot of BYOD support. They've got a lot of trial support. What Gene Munster said in a research note, he talked about how Apple already had 98% of the Fortune 500. Mm-hmm. Testing and or implementing iPhone and iPad. So, you know, Apple is already all over enterprise, but they're not all over enterprise from an IT-centric standpoint.
And they certainly don't have the level of confidence from enterprise level IT departments that they should, and rightly so, because Apple has a long track record of half-heartedly going into the enterprise market and then just kind of dropping it.
Right. And Apple also doesn't have the best corporate management tools, fleet management tools. You know, enterprise has always been at best a half-hearted and we're probably going to blow you off attempt.
Yes.
Usually more of a fine, that's fine, whatever, right? And then at worst it's a why should I care, right? You got those three levels. You've got half-hearted and we're probably going to screw you. You've got, yeah, fine, whatever. And then you've got, I don't care. Why should I care?
And none of those are good business prospects.
No, especially, you know, for a long time, we used to talk about, back in the days when the Mac was Apple's only product, we used to talk about how IT managers, especially at the C-suite level, they had their hands held by the entire Wintel industry. Right, the Wintel industry, both from a hardware perspective and from a Microsoft perspective, they would give these guys and rarely girls, because IT C-suite level stuff is still dominated by men. They would give them roadmaps and access to aspects of the roadmap that were otherwise secret, and you know these folks would be able to plan. They'd be able to budget. They'd be able to, you know, they'd know what was coming. Plus, they were made to feel important. And Apple never did that.
No, they didn't.
And this was one of the things that often held back Apple in the corporate world. Plus, Apple didn't do discounts, at least not significant discounts. And Apple wouldn't bring, you know, company executives, IT executives to Apple and show them around and tell them what they're doing. You know, just Apple has never really played all those games. And it really wasn't until the iPhone, the iPad became such a sought after device that these large, mega huge corporations started allowing them to come in through the back door in terms of BYOD, and then to a lesser extent, various corporate pilot programs. And today, Apple really is doing well in enterprise, but it's doing well despite itself.
It is. And, well, they're doing really well at the consumer level. And so all of these enterprise people, outside of their work roles, are consumers.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think for the first time, we also saw a lot of IT people wanting iPhones and iPads. That was certainly a part of it. But now we have IBM willing to do the heavy lifting. They're not only going to be offering comprehensive enterprise-centric solutions that involve iPhones and iPads, they're going to be selling the iPhones and iPads.
Right.
And that's a big deal. That is, you know, fine. I can't trust this. Here I am. I'm a C-suite guy. I'm an IT. I'm the, you know, chief technology officer. I can't trust Apple, but I can trust IBM.
And, okay, yeah, there you go. And now you don't have to trust Apple because you're still trusting IBM, but you're getting the Apple gear in the process.
But you're getting the Apple gear in the process, yeah. That's right. That's right. And I think this is bad news for Android. I think the Android ecosystem can at this point give up on enterprise, at least for the next few years.
Yeah, it looks like IBM and Apple will probably have a pretty strong control over the mobile enterprise market, and then the company that will be behind them will be Microsoft.
Right, and you know, or BlackBerry, if BlackBerry survives.
I don't expect that to happen.
And it's interesting. So you know, Android has not only the problem of fragmentation. Android also has the problem of being a big security sieve and malware just being all over the place. Mm-hmm. And there's no one really doing any kind of big enterprise push like Microsoft does for Windows Phone and BlackBerry does for BlackBerry, and now IBM is doing for iPhone.
Yeah. Now, had IBM teamed up with, say, Samsung, then that would have given Android a really strong foothold in the enterprise market.
Right, and that's not going to happen because Samsung doesn't control the software. And we're going to talk about that later.
Oh, foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing. And, why... And that's part of the problem. You know, IBM, I think that you have to partner with the people that are doing the software, not the hardware. So IBM could maybe have partnered with Google. That could have made sense.
But okay, I could see that.
Partnering with Samsung isn't going to do it. And Samsung can't duplicate what IBM can do by any stretch of the imagination. In terms of being some sort of big enterprise platform for mobile. I mean, you know, as I've said repeatedly, Samsung has delusions of software relevance at best.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so this is a big deal. This is a big deal for Apple. This is a big deal for iOS. This is probably a big deal for IBM. And note that this is an exclusive deal. the announcement, I think it included the word exclusive 6 different times.
Yeah, I think Apple and IBM are trying to get a point across there.
Yes, and that is also good news for IBM. IBM doesn't have to worry about some other company coming in and being able to do the same sort of thing. So this is going to allow what's the company called? IBM.
IBM.
This is going to allow them to sell lots of services and solutions and lots of support services and solutions. And that's a big thing for IBM. That's one of the things that they do right now. It's one of the things that where they make a lot of money is simply supporting other companies with all sorts of services and solutions. I lost my train of thought.
That's all right. I was waiting to hear where you're going to end up with that.
Mm-hmm. You're the best.
Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah. The big thing that I see Apple getting out of this, beyond more sales at the corporate level, is trust, and that's something that they have not had at this level,
nor have they deserved.
Exactly, yes, yeah. Time and again, Apple has dipped their toe into the market, only to just turn around and walk away.
So, yeah, this kind of becomes a best of both worlds scenario for Apple. I mean, Apple gets to let IBM focus on what IBM does well. And IBM gets to let Apple focus on what Apple does well. And they, you know, they said, of course, this is the sort of thing that they would say. But the IBM executives that talked about this deal said that they think that Apple's mobile hardware is the best hardware on the market.
And of course, they said that, but I think it's also accurate in this case.
Yeah, and even if it's not 100%, I think it's accurate. You think it's accurate, but even just take that out of the equation. It lets IBM let someone else focus on both the operating system and the hardware.
Right, and then they get to focus on what their specialty is, which is providing all the services.
Yep. Yeah, so it's an interesting development. This is going to be a big deal for Apple in the long term.
Oh, you just read my mind.
Yay! And it's going to, you know, Gene Munster, who is normally considered a big Apple cheerleader. He poo-pooed the idea that this is going to have some kind of immediate impact on Apple's bottom line, and he may be right in the immediate future, but in the long term, this really is going to cement Apple's leadership in the enterprise mobile space.
And Gene's with you on that. He sees this as a good long-term thing for Apple. So it's okay for you two to still get together for drinks.
Yeah, fun fact. Gene actually wants me to call him Roddy.
Well, I'm just...
I think he's a Rowdy Piper fan.
And good for him. Yeah. And if that works for you guys, then who am I to judge?
Yeah. Yeah, Alan wants me to call him Al, and Gene wants me to call him Roddy. Whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm good either way. Whatevs.
I hope someday I can be as cool as you, Brian.
Well, I stole that line from you, so I think you're already there.
Oh, well, my work here is done.
Just kidding, Gene. Just kidding, of course.
I think we should start referring to him as Roddy in articles.
Little Easter egg.
Yeah.
Little Apple context machine Easter egg.
And our listeners, they'll read the articles and they'll all laugh. And Gene will read it and he'll be like, what is up with these people?
That Brian, he's so funny. He's so funny. All right. So something that's not funny, something that's a little less funny, at least in a haha kind of way, is the state of the mobile market.
Yeah, it's not funny, haha.
This is. Do you remember that piece I wrote saying that 2014 would be Tim Cook's year?
Yeah, I remember Roddy calling and saying how great he thought it was.
So far, that's shaping up to be the case. In general, you know, the real point of that column was saying that this is the year for Tim Cook to release a new product category and to you know, forever put his imprint on Apple. And I think that we're in the I think that that's happening all around us as we speak. But what's interesting is that we're starting to see a sea change in the Apple versus Samsung coverage.
Yes, it's starting to look more, or the impression that we're starting to get at least a little bit is that Samsung is becoming the underdog in all this.
Yeah, you know, it used to be like, you know, how is Samsung going to keep up with, or how is Apple going to keep up with Samsung? You know, Apple's got to strike at Samsung with a new iPhone. You know, we got that for 2 or 3 years. And during that time, I wrote several times to the effect that, you know, that Samsung is merely Android's flavor of the day. They happened to be the company to get a couple of things right in the Android market, most particularly big screens.
Mm-hmm.
And that Samsung has delusions of software relevance. We mentioned that earlier. It's our foreshadowing. And also that Samsung, you know, I asked the question, the rhetorical question, what is Samsung going to do when Apple erases the big screen advantage? And what we're seeing is that even before Apple officially does erase that large screen advantage, because you expect a large screen iPhones to come out, right?
I do. I'm thinking the 4.7 inch model is a sure thing. 5.5 inch, I don't know.
Okay. So the 4.7 is definitely coming. We're finally in agreement on that. And already we're seeing Samsung's sales take a dive, right? Was it 2 weeks ago? There was a report.
That sounds about right. Yeah, it's been in the last couple
weeks. They announced earnings, and it was they missed.
Yeah, not only did they miss what analysts expected, they missed their own expectations.
Their own guidance, right? And supposedly they have low tier and mid tier devices piling up unsold. The Galaxy
S5
has been a disappointment. It's despite being brand new, it's being outsold by iPhone. And we're now even starting to see some coverage that effectively puts Samsung in that beleaguered category. But you know how Samsung needs to catch up to Apple, and how it's interesting. It's interesting because it wasn't that long ago that we were just getting this mainstream deluge of, or deluge even, depending on where you're from, of Apple catching up and Apple needing to catch up and Apple playing catch up and Apple struggling to compete with Samsung. All these negative sentiments for Apple, and we're starting to see those come out for Samsung now.
Which is very interesting because, well, Samsung, they're not hurting, but they are not making the sales that they expected. And they're not living up to analysts' expectations. They're still selling a boatload of product around the world, though.
And they're still the only other hardware company making money in the mobile space.
Yes,
that's
an important point.
To their credit, to their corporate credit, they are still making money. It's just they're missing. And I mean, and this is like we're starting to see And I don't even know how to pronounce the name because I don't speak any Chinese. Xiaomi?
Let's go with that.
Xiaomi? Okay, so...
Let's go with Xiaomi because that's less likely to get you in trouble.
Yeah, and it's less likely to be accurate, too.
Yeah, but I'm just going with less trouble. Sometimes that's what it's all about for me. What will get me in the least amount of trouble? That's what I'll do.
All right, so I'm actually going to look up Xiaomi pronunciation.
Oh. And here I was all ready to live on the edge and just make up pronunciations. Yeah. Maybe we could go with something completely different for the pronunciation. Like it's.
I think it's Xiaomi. That's what I think it is.
Oh, I was going to change it completely and go something like blueberry.
Right. So they're being called the Chinese Apple.
Oh, geez.
I mean, that's been the case for a year and a half at least.
You know, I have a problem with companies being called the whatever Apple. It's to me like in the old days when we had video stores, and I'd go in and I'd pick up a VHS tape off of the shelf, and it would say, "If you like the Rocky Horror Picture Show, or in the vein of Rocky Horror, then you know, then this is a movie for you." Invariably, it was just a crap, horrible movie. And
yeah, but so was Rocky Horror Picture Show. No one loves Rocky Horror Picture Show because it's a great movie.
It's a wonderful movie.
It's a wonderful experience.
Okay, it's a wonderful experience. It is absolutely a wonderful experience. And it's something that everyone should experience in a group, not by themselves. That's just kind of weird if you're just watching it alone. But what's my point? My point is that what it taught me was that when people start saying it's the whatever of, in that case, Rocky Horror, or in this case, Apple, that it's probably not the case, or people are trying to manipulate the information to suit their own needs, and they're using, in this case, Apple as a tool to do that.
Yeah, they've got a word for that.
Right.
Marketing.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that somewhere.
Right. So one of the reasons why this company gets compared to Apple is because the leader, the company founder, the CEO of the company, has specifically expressly and overtly styled himself after Steve Jobs, even to the point of wearing mock turtlenecks. And Steve Jobs was his model. Apple was his model, supposedly. And I'll get to that in a second, my point here. And his company is making really good-looking phones that it was selling for very little money. And so, you know, these things would, like, sell out like in a flash, and they do really well. And but here's my problem with calling them the Chinese Apple or the Apple of China or even the Asian Apple, which I've also seen. They don't control the hardware and the software either. He's just another company making just another Android handset, and they don't have anything to differentiate it long term.
Well, there you go. That goes right back to what I was saying. Because if they're not doing the whole package, then they really can't, in this case, be the Apple of whatever market.
Right. Right. And, but it does show Samsung's weakness. Because Samsung doesn't control the software. And because Samsung's efforts to add a software layer that anyone would care about have failed miserably, Samsung is vulnerable, highly vulnerable to any company like Xiaomi that comes along and can do what they're doing, but do it differently enough in a way that might actually catch people's attention.
You know, and right now, it's a market where if you want to sell, you have to find a way to truly differentiate yourself from all the other products, because everyone is just essentially copying Apple's designs, and they're putting the same Android software on their phones. So they need to do something to set themselves apart. So in that sense, I suppose you could say that these guys are the Apple of the Chinese smartphone market, because they are working to truly set themselves apart.
Yeah, they are doing that. But in the long run, they're just another Android OEM. And they're just as vulnerable to anyone else that comes along that can do something that's vaguely interesting. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people get excited about this company because the leader is so interesting. And especially for, you know, you got to think about it from a China standpoint. You know, most of the development, you know, all these devices are made in China, but they're being made by companies that are based elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Xiaomi has got a little bit of something for Chinese folks in China to be proud of, to be interested in, right? You know, this is he's their own guy. And no one besides nerds like you and me and people who really pay close attention to the technology world could give rats behind about controlling the whole widget, because Apple is the only company that cares about that in the first place.
Right. I'm glad they care about it because it's given us the iPhone.
Yep. Yeah, but you know, I think that you could certainly forgive Chinese fans of Xiaomi a break, so to speak, for not caring about that, and for, you know, just being excited about the company as a whole.
Yes, and you hit on something a couple minutes ago that's just been sticking in my head, and
okay.
You said they're just another Android OEM, and I think that's a huge problem for all of the Android device makers, because at the end of the day, the bottom line is they're just another Android OEM.
Oh yeah, totally. I totally agree with that. I mean, we've talked in the past about the fact that it doesn't matter. It's kind of like Microsoft. Microsoft didn't really care about it. Cared about its OEMs for Windows as a whole, but it really didn't matter in terms of any individual OEM. As long as PCs were being sold, Microsoft won.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The same thing with Google. As long as Android devices are being purchased, Google gets what it wants, which is, you know, the window into the further window into people's lives.
Yeah, that's ultimately what Google wants. They want to have that window into all of our worlds.
You know, but I wonder, one of the things I was thinking about in terms of Google's self-driving car and about bringing
Al Sharpton.
Mr. Mulally. Bringing him on board is, you know, what does this say about Larry Page's focus on Android? And I'm guessing he doesn't have much of one. I'm guessing he doesn't really care about it. I mean, I could be wrong. I have no, this is not evidence based. This is intuition based, strictly intuition based. You know, they didn't bring someone on board that could help them with Android. They brought someone on board. First, I think there's been one board member added to Google since 2005. And they've got 10 members, and that's a relatively small board. Only Apple's is smaller in terms of the large tech giants. And they add their, you know, their second one since 2005, and their first one in several years. And it's a car guy. I wonder how committed to Android Google is. It's not like they make any money from it.
Well, I'm guessing they are committed to Android. But instead of looking at this as, wow, they brought a car guy on, is Google really still committed to Android? We should look at it as Google is continually looking very long term for their goals, and
it's true.
And they lay their groundwork for that early.
It's true. To Larry's credit.
Yeah. So if they're bringing on a Ford guy now, at a point when they've been doing tests, very limited tests on self-driving cars. Mm-hmm. All right. That what that tells me isn't that they're blowing off Android. It's that they're seriously looking at the long term for transportation.
Yeah, I definitely didn't mean to imply that I think that Google's blowing off Android or actively blowing it off. I simply mean to question Larry's interest level.
Well, maybe it's along the lines of, okay, we have everyone and everything in place so that we can meet our long-term Android goals. Now we need to get everyone and everything in place so we can work on this other long-term goal as well. And it isn't about losing focus on Android, but about setting up a separate focus for, in this case, the automotive world.
But every additional focus means less focus on the things that previously got attention, by definition.
Yes, but that's true. If they can minimize how much focus is lost by instead of redirecting people, but instead adding people, maybe the loss of focus is minimized, and they'll still be able to stay on track.
You're a generous soul, sir.
Well, in many cases I am, but I look at what Google has, which is a lot of money and a lot of money.
But there is only one Larry Page. The same thing. All this can be applied to Apple too. There is zero doubt that much of Tim Cook's attention and some of the other C-level executives' attention has been focused on bringing the iWatch to market, which means by definition that iPhone, iPad, iOS, OS X, and Macs have gotten less attention from those executives. That by definition, there is no other way to chop that up.
Sure, that's true. Depending on how they are delegating the management, that doesn't have to be a big issue. But you're right. By definition, there is less focus on any given project when you add another project in.
Correct. By definition. And this is true for every company. It's true for any person, every company, any entity, which I guess I'm being redundant thanks to the Supreme Court. But that's another
issue. Yeah. Okay, here's another thing to think about. Maybe what Google has going on here is a single focus, but they have multiple components that they need to complete to reach that single goal. And Android is only a small component in whatever the bigger project is.
Right.
In which case, they're not really losing focus. They're just continuing to work on the individual elements that encompass the bigger focus. And I'm just totally throwing that out there. It's not like I have any inside information on what Google's long-term plans are, other than they want all of my information.
Correct. So they can sell it.
Yeah, because clearly my information is worth a lot of money. Not to pants makers.
Not to pants makers. No, clearly not. Just throwing money down the well there.
How many tangents can I take us on this week?
I don't know. I'm thinking we can still keep going on some tangents. I would also like to note that I have a blog at geektells.com.
Really? And what happens at this blog, Brian?
Well, quite frankly, recently not as much as there should be, but it's there. I use it mainly to talk about things that I don't talk about at TMO, So for the last couple of years, that's been stuff relating to the novel I'm working on.
Which, by the way, I'm really excited about your novel.
Oh, thank you very much. Now, I believe that you also have a blog.
I do. It's called Fresh Brew Tales.
Fresh Brew Tales. Now, what goes on there?
Absolute craziness. That's where I go and write about all of the weird and interesting things that I see people do when I hang out in coffee shops.
For instance, porn. That would be one of the things.
And I've seen that more than once. You have seen that too and told me about of what you have seen.
I think that my example that you, and you did write that up.
I did.
I think that my example is the most egregious. Egregious in terms of the rest of the coffee shop, by which I mean me, could see.
Yeah, that was very, very
blatant.
When I did my Ignite Denver presentation about Fresh Brew Tales, mm-hmm. I did mention quite a bit of porn incidents, or several porn incidents in that, and one of them was the one that you shared with me.
Excellent. I'm glad to have been a part of that by proxy. So yeah, so you're at freshbrewtales.com. It's TLES.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm at geektells.com. It's TELLS. A little bit different there. Tales and tells.
I never realized how close the endings were until just now.
Yeah.
Huh.
All right, so another thing to mention is I played Monument Valley after your recommendation.
Really?
Yeah, I did. This awesome. Is a game. Now, is it? I forget. Is it a hyper game? Is it on your iPad, iPhone too? Because I played on my iPhone.
A hyper game?
Hybrid.
Oh, hybrid. I don't know. It never even occurred to me to play it on my iPhone. I'm not an iPhone gamer hardly.
Yeah, I do almost all of my gaming on an iPad. And anyway, I played a game. This is a game that it's spatial problem solving with an M.C. Escher angle.
Yes. See what you did there.
See what I did there? Didn't even. I wish I could say I did that. I mean, yes, I did that on purpose.
That was
anyway. It was a fun game. I'm really glad that you recommended that to me, or recommended that to everybody, because that was on our.
I'm glad you liked it.
That was on our show. I think it was 2 weeks ago when we talked about
our favorite games.
Yeah, our favorite games, favorite apps.
So here's a bit of news to go with that now, because the biggest complaint I've heard from people has mm-hmm. been that after they finish the levels, they wish there were more.
Yeah.
And there will be. They are actively working on a whole set of new levels, and they're getting much closer to being able to release those to us. So before too long, you will be able to play more Monument Valley.
Now, is that going to be like an in-game release? Is it in-game purchase, a version 2? Or a free update?
I don't know if it's a free update or if it's an in-game purchase, but from what I've heard, sounds like it will roll into the current game as opposed to being a second version of the game that's released.
And like the original game was what, $3.99 or $2.99?
It was $2, $3, $4, something like that. It was a nominal price to pay for a good game.
I'd happily pay for a major update. There were several hours of content in the first one, and it was lots of fun. Anyway, it's a cool game, and I'm glad that you turned me onto it. Did you end up playing Lex at all, or Digits?
No, because I was afraid that I was going to get so sucked in that I wouldn't do anything else.
Good cover.
That, and I don't care about your games. I'm kidding.
No, you're not.
No, it's
so heartbroken. It's supposed to all be all about me.
Well, it is all about you, and I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to devote enough time to you if I was busy playing games.
Also a good cover.
You know me. I'm horrible about games, and you know how I play games. It's the same way that I read books, which is I'll have like 5 or 6 going all at the same time, and I'll set one down for weeks on end and then pick it back up.
But you finished Monument Valley, right?
Yeah, so that says a lot. I played Monument Valley over... I finished the whole game in less than a week. And for me, that's like blazing fast.
Yeah, that's intense.
Yeah.
For you.
Yeah, so for me to finish a game, that says a lot.
Right. All right, so let's throw in one more Apple-related thing.
Oh, sure. Like what?
You did... You covered a... an Apple, a Citigroup price target increase.
Right.
This morning. I think we mentioned that on TDO too, but I wanted to mention because this is also kind of about, I mean, it used to be that the Citigroup was like the one
that was always going, firm. Apple is test stupids.
Yes. And that they kept being wrong, but whatever. Different. So they have a new analyst now. They used to have three analysts. At least one of those was terminated. I don't know what the other two guys are doing. They might not just be covering Apple anymore, but they've got a new guy named Suva. Is that right? Jim Suva, who initiated coverage on Wednesday. That's today. With a $110 price target,
and he's new in that that he's the single person covering Apple for Citigroup. I think it was a couple years ago they had a team of three people, and he was part of that team.
He was the third guy. It was Kevin Chang, Mr. Jung.
I thought Kevin Chang came later, but U-N-G. it's like a soap opera over there. But yeah.
So he was the third. Okay, I went looking for the third name and I didn't find it before. So he's initiating coverage, but because it's no longer the team, that's why it's an initiation.
Yes,
I see. Yeah. So again, part of that sea change, part of that sea change that we're seeing with Apple, and it's just real interesting. And the iPhone 6 hasn't even been announced yet. You know, we're still a good 2.5 months away from that. The iWatch certainly hasn't been announced. We're at least 2.5 months away from that. I'm only assuming. My belief is that it'll be announced at the same time that iOS 8 is rolled out, and at the same time, the new iPhones are announced. Although, you know, I could see, even if it was ready, I could see Apple not wanting to dilute the coverage for iPhone 6 and waiting a few weeks to announce the iWatch. I could see that.
I would be surprised if they announced them at the same time.
Yeah, it depends. It depends on when they want to start selling them. Depends on when it's ready. If it's ready, I think they will, and I think they'll go ahead and they'll suck it up and they'll announce them at the same time. But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. Yeah. So it's been an interesting week, and there you have it.
Wow. Yeah, there you have it. Did we just make it through a whole nother show?
Yeah, we did.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and everybody hearing this, listen to it.
That's amazing. Thank you for listening.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me everywhere at Mac Observer and Brian too, because we write awesome stories. So does John Martellaro, Kelly Gamont, Melissa Holt, Vern Seward, Nancy Gravely. Oh, who am I forgetting?
Dave Hamilton.
Dave Hamilton. Oh, yeah, he writes for us every now and then, too.
Yeah, Kelly.
I already said Kelly.
Did you get Vern?
I got Vern.
Sweet. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer, some of whom, most of whom, all of whom were just mentioned. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. Recorded just for TMO. That's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.